This is Focus West Michigan for Tuesday, November 4, 2025. I'm Joe Bilecki with your local news. Kentwood-based Feeding America West Michigan launched its Bridge the SNAP Gap campaign. WGVU's David Limbaugh has the details.
We serve a lot large area here, about 40 counties in Michigan, including all of the Upper Peninsula. And through those 40 counties, we know that at least about 300,000 people currently are impacted by the SNAP pause.
President and CEO of Feeding America West Michigan, Ken Estelle, says the federal government's pause in the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program has created a $19 million monthly food assistance deficit. Prior to the funding pause, Estelle says the food bank was experiencing the highest levels of need in the organization's 43-year history.
If I compare that to, say, the last 12 months, over that time frame, the amount of times people are coming for help has increased over 70%.
Feeding America is accepting food and monetary donations at its Kentwood, Benton Harbor, and Cadillac Warehouse locations, as well as hosting two emergency mobile food pantries at Kentwood Community Church this month, something the organization has never done before.
Obviously, if you can bring food to our food bank, what we do is we take, and that gets out to a lot of different food pantries in our community, but also look at the local food pantries in your neighborhood. They may be able to get direct help as well because we're all really struggling with this crisis of need.
More information can be found online at feedwm.org. I'm David Limbaugh.
Grand Rapids leaders are evaluating the city's low-cost electric vehicle rental program 1 year after its launch. As WGVU's Steve Morrison reports, they say demand is higher than expected.
The Mobile GR department is calling its DART EV car share program a success. Electric vehicles are stationed in parking facilities downtown and in city neighborhoods. Drivers sign up through an app and reserve vehicles for $5 an hour up to 24 hours, returning them to designated charging stations. Since launching last year, roughly 200 users have collectively driven more than 143,000 miles. Ariana Jeske, assistant director of Mobile GR, says the program has expanded from 6 vehicles to 9, with plans for a dozen by 2027.
It's something that is really getting people through times where they may have had a vehicle and reached that point where it's too expensive to repair, or they're exploring if they want to be car-free within the city.
The startup cost the city $500,000. Paid to the program operator, plus the cost of installing 4 charging stations at $50,000 each. City leaders are seeking ways to continue funding the program beyond its 3-year trial.
We've had a lot of interest from private developers at large multifamily units wanting to have one of these cars parked there. So we're looking at what we can do to maybe fill that need and get more of the vehicles out in the community.
I'm Dee Morrison.
Grand Haven is going to kill up to 40% of the deer living in the city and donate the meat to help reduce hunger in the community. After years of research, debate, and citizen complaints, WGVU's Phil Dawson reports the city now has a plan to cull the herd.
I'm 100% behind this.
Grand Haven Councilman Kevin McLaughlin says because the overpopulation of hungry deer are damaging parks, cemeteries, and forests in the city, some of them have got to go.
We have to take care of it. We have to do it.
Drone flights and other surveillance estimate the deer population in Grand Haven at over 150 animals. City manager Ashley Latch says the cull will reduce but not eliminate the herd.
Not to exceed 40% or 50 individual deer annually.
That may still leave Grand Haven with what some experts consider an unsustainably large number of deer. Mayor Bob Manetza says it's a start.
They didn't happen overnight. They won't be fixed overnight. And so we're going to have to be a little bit patient, but we'll get there.
And Councilman Michael Fritz says it would help if people didn't make the deer feel so welcome in the city.
People, please stop feeding them. There's people out there that are still feeding them. You can enjoy looking at them, but don't feed them.
I'm Phil Dawson.
Two senior officials from Grand Rapids-based Grace Christian University have been appointed to a National Artificial Intelligence School Advisory Board. WGVU's David Limbaugh tells us how these leaders are leveraging the appointment to shape Grace's own AI guidelines.
We're really excited to be representing small faith-based institutions among those big universities because we think that the Christian biblical worldview has a lot to offer in terms of perspective on humanity and where this technology is going.
That's Provost and Chief Academic Officer of Grace Christian University, Dr. Matthew Lovren. He, along with Associate Provost Dr. Scott Shaw, has been appointed to the Center for Digital Education's Higher Education Artificial Intelligence Council. The National Council unites leaders from over 70 institutions across 20 states. states.
You're looking at how AI is affecting teaching and learning, just student work in the classroom. You're also looking at how to prepare students for careers in a world that is increasingly going to become dominated by AI.
A recent survey by the center revealed that 91% of schools are experimenting with AI tools, but only 2.5% feel AI is well integrated into their operations. Lovren says their experience on the National Advisory Board will serve as a guide for creating an AI guidance council at Grace.
One thing that we really like to focus on as faculty is hearing student voices and allowing their own unique perspectives and experiences to come through in their academic work, and AI really seems to shortcut that.
The Center for Digital Education's first National AI Council meeting is in January. I'm David Limbaugh.
It started with one man's mission to feed the hungry and grew into a community event meeting the needs of families in crisis. WGVU's Dee Morrison reports.
Growing up for me, unbeknownst to me actually, we were dependent on food subsidies. And my mom did such a good job at hiding that fact from us.
Jay Zomberg now owns Zomberger's food truck in Hamilton.
Eventually we learned that a lot of our meals were because of a program called Surplus Foods out of downtown Grand Rapids.
Recently, watching news reports of the federal government halting food assistance funding, Zomberg became worried about local families in need.
I posted online that, hey, I'm going to be out in West Olive later in November. I'd like to offer 50 free meals. No questions asked whatsoever. Just come out. If you need a hot meal, just tell me anything on our menu and I'll just give it to you for free.
Response to his social media post was overwhelming as other business owners chimed in with offers of help, more food trucks, crafters, entertainers, pet food, and cash donations.
We're turning what was going to be just a free meal event into the whole community just really embracing those that need it the most.
A church in Holland offered its parking lot to host the free food event that now has more than 16 businesses involved.
It's up to us. We can't just assume that every church out there is going to open up their doors or every mission or every shelter is going to be able to provide. Eventually, we have to be the ones that step up and are the providers.
I'm Dee Morrison.
Coming up soon, WGVU's Patrick Center previews tonight's presentation of Frontline on WGVU Public Television, but first, news from around the state. New rules for Michigan law enforcement drones could be coming. Colin Jackson has more on bills planned for the Michigan House of Representatives.
The bills would eventually keep departments and agencies from using drones made by companies on a federal government watch list. Supporters argue that equipment could possibly store and send data abroad. Republican State Representative Will Brook says the bills would at first let departments use a software patch to make the drones more secure.
Give them a time where then, you know, normal budgeting cycles will allow, you know, those police departments and the DNR and others that use these drones to replace them on a normal cycle basis. Then it's not asking them to, you know, throw away their whole fleet of drones and buy a new one.
Brooks says the bills would also make it easier for law enforcement and security to take down drones flying where they shouldn't be. I'm Colin Jackson.
There are concerns that skyrocketing Affordable Care Act health insurance rates may put the health of tens of thousands of Michiganders at serious risk. More than 500,000 Michiganders get their health insurance coverage through the ACA marketplace, also known as Obamacare, but rates for next year are jumping by double-digit percentages. Dr. Aisha Harris is a family medicine physician in Flint. She fears many of her patients will drop their Obamacare coverage because they can't afford it.
I know what America's health status is, and it's not as healthy as people think. And so this is going to be detrimental to, like, how we're thriving as a country because now people can't take care of themselves.
Democrats want Congress to restore the tax credit that reduced prices in the Obamacare system as part of a deal to reopen the federal government. Republicans say they are willing to negotiate, but only after Democrats vote to end the federal government shutdown. Focus West Michigan is brought to you by listeners like you. To support this show and everything we do here, visit WGVUnews.org and click the donate button. And for a weekly dose of news right to your inbox, sign up for the WGVU newsletter. Tonight at 10 o'clock on WGVU Public Television, Frontline premieres The Rise of Germany's New Right. Support for nationalist anti-immigrant parties has surged across Europe in recent years, including in Germany, where far-right leaders have risen to the brink of power for the first time since World War II. WGVU's Patrick Center spoke with director and correspondent Evan Williams about why their brand of hardline nationalist politics has swelled in popularity and the global implications.
We started this film really looking at the rise of support for far-right nationalists or hard-right or new-right nationalist parties across Europe. And it's happening in multiple countries. And we started looking at trying to do something across Europe. And then, of course, Germany became of much more interest because of the work we'd done in the past few years on that forefront line. But then, of course, it emerged that during the course of our production, they won an election. They did very well then in the federal election. They doubled their vote. They almost doubled the number of seats in federal parliament. They are very much on the rise. They've now probably equaled, if not beaten, the other main party in the polls since that election. So there's a sense of a real wave of support for these far-right, hard-right nationalist parties. And we wanted to acknowledge or find out really why that was. And then the more we looked at it, we started looking at the impact of social media. We discovered the impact of Russian disinformation. And of course, during our production period, a new administration was elected in the United States, which then started to voice support for this very far-right party. So everything sort of came together during that period.
Germany has a history, a post-World War II history. There's a banning of Nazi symbols and slogans and criminalizing Holocaust denial. How is this playing into it when you've had a society that has had to reckon with the Holocaust and now you're starting to see this taking place?
Yeah, that's an absolutely critical point, Patrick. You're absolutely right. People outside Germany, we probably don't really understand what they call it defensive democracy. And what it is, after the experience of World War II, we've got to go back one step, as we do in the film, and realize that people voted for the Nazis to come into power. They didn't get a majority. They got a minority, around 30%. They were then invited into a coalition, and they then used legal means to ban all other parties. So in the German way of looking at things, the Nazis used democracy to destroy democracy. So after World War II, they set up a domestic intelligence organization, which is there to defend the constitution and democracy. And by that, what they mean is that they are protecting the dignity and rights of all German citizens, whether you're white Aryan or whether you're from a migrant background or whether you're a minority or anything else. And it's a very unique institution and experience, but they're using that mechanism to try and monitor and prevent a return of history, particularly in the German context. So this organization, Domestic Intelligence, monitors extremism. They then take their findings to courts. They are then told whether or not they can then increase surveillance on these organizations, and then they go ahead and do that. And it is for the sole purpose of preventing a return to what Germany went through in World War II.
Does this become an issue of what Americans would understand as a deep state and a violation of the right of free speech?
Well, exactly. I mean, it cuts across exactly those issues. And as the political leaders from the far right, from the Alternative for Deutschland, who have been declared an extremist organization by Domestic Intelligence, a confirmed extremist threat to democracy is the way they term it. Of course, that finding has now been challenged under appeal. It's now reverted in German parlance to a suspected extremist threat until the courts make their findings. Now, these leaders say, well, we are the victims of extreme control by a government. We can't say what we want. There are controls on freedom of speech because of this. We can't say things that were Nazi slogans because they are now banned and illegal, even though in the view of the AfD leaders, these are things that merely state their support for a strong Germany. So they claim that this is a breach of freedom of speech. The German constitution would see it another way and say these are banned slogans because they were used by the Nazis and that led to the tragedies of World War II as experienced inside Germany. So this is the territory we're in, and it's extremely important for the Western world to, I think, look at the experiences of Germany. It's not, in my view, sufficient enough to say that everything should be, in a way, free, where it resonates with the history that was experienced in Germany, because it means something, particularly to people who may adhere to a more extremist view.
You've interviewed a number of people. So from those interviews, what are you finding is driving this popularity of hardline nationalist politics?
Oh, there's a number of things. I mean, I think we're experiencing this, and it's been experienced in the United States. There's a large number of people, first of all, particularly in the east of Germany, who feel disenfranchised and ignored by the mainstream parties. And let's put it together. They feel left behind by globalism. They feel like they're not getting the dividend of the reunification in Germany. There's been a series of quite disastrous attempts to impose quite high green policies in Germany. It would have cost people tens of thousands, possibly of euros and dollars. And they're buying in to the one thing that is really driving this, which is the AFD and the far-right parties are basically scapegoating immigrants, migrants, Muslims for all the problems. And they are buying into this idea that the AFD's got it right. And when you get a high-profile, say, attack by an immigrant or an asylum seeker or a failed refugee, of course it gets to the headlines, and of course everybody sees immigrant terror everywhere. The statistics do not hold out on that. They do not say that there's been an increased crime wave because of immigration, but the AFD and the far right push this consistently. And so you've got this collection of things. You've got a general anxiety in Europe. There's a war on the European continent. There's anxiety about among young people that they can't afford a house. They've got no job security. There's a collection of things where they feel the mainstream has not been listening to them and don't have the solutions. The AFD has been very effective at pushing their message of pride and joy and ethno-nationalism in being German, and forget about all the bad things that were being told about us. We can be proud again. And they're pushing it through social media, particularly with young people. This is what's happening at the moment. And that's one of the reasons I think they're surging so strongly in the polls.
And then there's Russian influence online. We've had U.S. Vice President J.D. Vance in Europe making comments. What roles are those two influences playing?
Yeah, so in the course of our production, we discovered that the Russians have been actively involved in a covert campaign of support for far-right parties in Europe, mainly in France, in Holland, in Germany in particular. And they're using a very sophisticated, well, quite sophisticated process of impersonating legitimate media outlets with fake news and disinformation. They've got an army of fake accounts that is flooding social media with, again, disinformation and fake accounts, highlighting and ramping up fear of migrants, close the borders, migrants and crime, stronger ethno-nationalism, this sort of thing. Tapping into legitimate fears that people have, that things aren't quite as certain as they used to be. You know, more money is now going to Ukraine than looking after the German unemployed. This sort of thing is being pushed out there by Russia. So we discovered this covert campaign of support for particularly the far right in Germany. And then, of course, in February, literally a couple of weeks before the federal election in Germany, Vice President J.D. Vance then basically supports the far right in Germany by saying there's no room for what's called a firewall. What he's referring to there is the firewall in Germany is a political convention that's been around since World War II, pretty much, that no mainstream parties will go into a coalition with the far right, with the AFD. And it was unprecedented, really, as we're told by analysts we interview for the film, that a senior member of the US administration would in fact intervene in this way in the German election, because he was saying there's no room for that anymore. And of course, German leaders fought back and they said, well, it's not really up to our friends in America to tell us how we should be running, you know, our relationships with a far-right party, a party which has been deemed officially suspected extremist by domestic intelligence. So that's how these two things came together. And what we've got now is basically sort of an ideological shared ground between the American administration and Russia on this particular point.
What do you want American viewers to take away from this?
I think we need to understand that there are potential costs in supporting what we could call this surge in ethno-nationalist, new right, far right parties that extol the virtues of anti-wokeism and family values and the rights of people in these countries. We don't really know yet where that leads. And if you look at what these people in Germany are saying, for example, their true belief, and this is one of the reasons they've been declared an extremist threat to democracy, is that they want to start deporting not just hundreds of people, but, you know, literally more than 1 million people, possibly even more, according to some of the intelligence that they gathered. So we could be looking at real changes and ruptures in society, as we're already now experiencing in the United States, of course, through the ICE arrests and detentions and deportations. I think we're seeing a major change, and we don't really know yet where that goes. So I think it's a matter of looking at Germany's experience in the past. I'm not saying that that's where America's going or all these countries are going. I'm not saying that at all. But there are historical resonances, and Germany has gone through that experience where maybe we should take some lessons from them about what this could potentially mean if we don't keep close eye on things.
Tonight at 10 o'clock on WGVU Public Television, Frontline premieres The Rise of Germany's New Right. Director, correspondent Evan Williams, thank you so much for your time.
Patrick, thanks so much for the interest.
This has been Focus West Michigan from WGVU for Tuesday, November 4, 2025. I'm Joe Bilecki. Our audio operations manager is Rick Bierling, and our news and public affairs director is Patrick Center. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and we'll be back with more news and events in West Michigan tomorrow. Thanks for listening.